If it feels like no one understands your problems or cares to listen, if it feels like there is no one else in this world who has gone through what you have, if you feel like you're so close to giving up on your goals, your business, your ideal life, but still holding on, Cafe with Monica was made for you. I'll show you how to deal with the everyday and not so everyday situations that surface in the lives of millennials. By sharing my experiences and knowledge, I hope to inform, inspire, and provide solutions to problems that may seem out of reach. So grab your coffee or drink of choice and let's just talk about it. Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. I'm really, really excited because I have a fellow therapist with me, Mary Beth. She is not a stranger to the podcast. We've actually recorded a podcast together where we talked about finding the right therapist that fits you. And we talked about our own experiences, some good ones, some bad ones. So really check out that episode. I do give a little bit more in depth of who she is, where she works. But today I wanted to bring her in so that she could really talk to us about boundaries. One of the things that I see on her Instagram is always kind of giving these tangible psychoeducation and just amazing resources for people who may not have access to mental health care, but are wanting to better themselves, have personal development. And so I love that about you, Mary Beth. Like, I think I told you this in our previous episode, that is one of the things that I loved from the get-go from you. I love following you and like seeing your posts. They always hit home to me.
Thank you. Oh, that means so much. I think part of the reason I went into this field was because I grew up in a place that didn't make therapy accessible. And you had to drive, you know, 45 minutes to get to the nearest therapist. So that was one of my primary goals. So I'm glad that it's coming across that way.
Yeah. How long have you been in private practice?
This fall, I'll be coming up on 4 years.
That is so crazy. I feel like time goes so fast. I started in September and I'm just like, oh, wow, it's going to be a year in a few months. So that's amazing. I think time flies.
Totally. I agree.
And you're in North Carolina, right?
Yeah. Yep. My practice is in Wake Forest. And then I also see clients virtually, especially right now.
Oh yeah. You know, have you been seeing kind of an increase in clients right now? It was kind of like crickets. People stopped, like canceled. And now there's just more and more people coming. And I think it's because it's like week 8, week 9 for some people of quarantine. And so they're starting to see the effects of the social isolation and just like being stuck with their spouse and all the things. I'm getting a lot of people that they're like, I'm just so tired of like being stuck at home with my family.
Yep, definitely. I would say in the past maybe 3 weeks, there's been like this giant boom where I'm at capacity. And it's a mixture of like, oh my gosh, this is so wonderful. I'm glad these people are reaching out for support and that I have an income right now. And I feel so grateful. And then also like, oh my gosh, I feel like the rest of the world is resting. And I also need some rest.
You know, I have the same thing. I'm so glad that you said that because a big part of me, I'm like, I'm so grateful that people are coming to me. But at the same time, I'm like, I had kind of been okay with things slowing down. And so I was slowing down and now I kind of have to get back up. And so that brings us to our topic today about boundaries, even just like personal, professional boundaries. But I know specifically you work with teens and young adults, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so how does the family, do you do family therapy or do you incorporate, or is it just kind of like the topic comes up?
Yeah, I do. So I specialize in family dynamics and I always try to tell people like, there are so many ways that family dynamics present. For instance, a client might come to me with anxiety and we kind of unpack that a little bit from a systemic family systems perspective and pull that apart and see what shifts can happen in the dynamic to reduce their anxiety. So that's just one example, but I have clients come to me for all different things. Boundaries is a huge topic, right? Really popular one. So I do some family therapy and I, you know, really leave it up to the client oftentimes. Like, do you feel comfortable bringing your family members in? I tell them, you know, if I think it would be a really productive thing to do in their treatment plan, and we go from there.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. So I'm going to go backtrack a little bit on more specific, like what your style is and what your typical client goes to you for.
Yeah. So they come for a variety of reasons. I would say there's a lot of family dynamics. There's a lot of anxiety. I am pretty eclectic in my approach, especially working with teens. Sometimes you've got to just like let them do it their way and ask for what they need and kind of show you what they need. And then I roll with it from there. So my sole mission is to make them really comfortable in therapy.
Right. Yeah.
No. I actually love working with resistant teens. It's such a challenge.
Really? That is so
crazy.
I don't. I've been getting a lot of, I think I told you this in the previous episode, I've been getting a lot of high school seniors, which just with that, I mean, not being able to have a stage to graduate, you know, not being able to go to prom and family just not understanding like that those experiences have been taken away from them due to COVID. That's kind of been like the basis of our therapy sessions, at least the common topics. But I want to really dive into the boundary setting because that's a big topic. Like I think so many people, I don't know. I also feel like it's a buzzword right now. Like a lot of people are like, you have to have boundaries. You know, you have to be direct, but nobody actually tells you how does that look like when it comes to maybe someone being resistant to your boundary or even just like from the beginning, how do you even know what boundaries to put in place?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. And I think it starts within yourself, identifying that. So I like to look at boundaries as being in different categories and really reflecting on your limits in those categories. So for instance, what are your verbal limits? What are your time limits? What are your physical limits? Another one people don't often think of is generosity limits. I mean, that was actually a big one for me. I realized one day I was like, I am going so overboard with buying people gifts. Like I need to reel it back. What is that about? And I think it's because my love language is gifts, but you know, just financial limits too. So really tuning in to those categories, or if you have more categories, and saying, you know, what are my limits in these areas and where are they being pushed? I think would be the first step.
I love that because oftentimes we don't want to look deeply in what do we not appreciate from other people doing for us? What makes us feel icky inside? What limits do we have? You know, I personally, for lunch, I have to be by myself. And that was something that I had to talk with my husband when we were all, you know, living in the same, working in the same space. And he wanted to chit chat because that is what he was used to in his work environment. So when COVID happened, I told him, hey, like the first 2 weeks, I told him, I love that you want to talk to me, but I need to have some sense of routine. And what helps me is when I have my 1 hour where I could just kind of digest everything that happened in the morning and really have more energy in the afternoon. And then I would love though to like catch up after the day's work, like we usually do. Mm-hmm. But going into that nature, instead of saying, I think right now when we're all frustrated and heated, we can maybe come across it as our boundary as very, very too direct or where it might upset the other person. So, and even with a family, I mean, that is, how do you say your boundary not take everybody else's emotions into account?
Yeah. So it's funny, as I was listening to you, I was like, she's such a therapist, because the first thing that I tell people to do when setting boundaries is to lead with validation. That you're going to allow the person to accept your boundary and really invest and listen when you lead with validation. So you were like, I love that you want to talk to me and connect with me. That was perfect. And then you went to expressing your own need using an I statement, right? Like, I really need this time. This is how I use it. This is why it's important to me. There wasn't any blaming you language. Like, you're always interrupting me during my lunch, right? Like, that would be an accusatory or a blaming statement, and people don't react well to those, and that's how fights start. So first leading with validation and then using that I statement, and then even you followed it up with like, let's move this to a different time where I would love to really engage more deeply with you.
Yeah, I think so too. I feel like finding the solution at the end, I also find like, because my approach is very solution focused, I'm like, okay, like I get it, you want to talk to me, but like, okay, where are we going to add this because that's important to my spouse? And I think when it comes to family, I mean, I've had to set boundaries as far as whenever we both got married, me and my mom would talk every single week. I mean, that was just And some days weren't, you know, realistic to be able to have conversations. So like setting a boundary and kind of letting her know like, hey, this week I'm just a lot is going on, or, you know, me and Adam have things going on. But it's hard for some people when they don't know what their limits are, or coming from a household where a lot of the time, sometimes our family may use guilt and shame. Mm-hmm. If we implement a boundary. So I don't know what your experience has been with from the get-go when somebody who may have a family who doesn't understand boundaries or has never had them in place, and now you have this person who is trying to set a boundary with a family.
Totally. So I think that what you're speaking to is enmeshment a little bit. Mm-hmm. And the way that because I'm a family systems person, I'm always looking at whether the family is more enmeshed or more differentiated. And often when they're in my office, it's because they're more enmeshed. So, and what that means is that there are, instead of like healthily differentiating and kind of becoming an individual and leaving the nest, usually around adolescence, like there are things that happen that make you stay in this role that you've been put in and placed in by your family. And it can be extremely cultural. And another way I describe it is that there are unwritten rules that you are supposed to abide by, and they are expected of you. And oftentimes, like, you didn't choose those, and maybe you're not okay with them, but there are consequences if you don't fulfill that role. And so that's when people come to me and they say, you know, I have a problem with this role and I need a boundary and I don't know how to set it, because there's been this intergenerational culture of enmeshment, and I will be a black sheep and I will be shunned and I will be excommunicated if I try to change this system. And so we really dive into some psychoeducation around enmeshment, and that's when I give them some tools and some language, because it's the fear of boundary setting that's underlying all of that, and which can keep them stuck in negative or unhealthy patterns for a while.
Yeah.
So I think we can like dive into some of those tools maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think my audience just loves anything that's tangible, so that they can take after listening to this and maybe kind of think for themselves, do I need to find a therapist who maybe have this type of style? And because there are some times where it's just hard to figure out what type of language, there's culture involved, like you said, where we have that fear of like, okay, I'm about to set a boundary with someone or be direct in my language, and I don't know what the consequences are going to be that. And I'm not ready for those. Like, I still want to be, you know, with my family and be able to spend time with them, but I know that this might not be, whatever way I say it, it might not have the right reaction or a great reaction that I would like. So yeah, go ahead and tell us what kind of exercise techniques you use with your clients in this situation.
Sure. So I think we've presented one already. Like, if you really like that structured format, starting with validation, and that, as I almost think of it as writing an essay, right? Like, that's your intro paragraph. Start with validation. And then your body of text is using I statements to communicate your need, trying to avoid you language or pointing fingers, and then ending with a follow-up of, you know, this is how I can come toward what you're asking me in a different way that's okay with me as the conclusion. So I like that. Another thing I ask clients, or I say to them, is if you're nervous to set boundaries, ask yourself, is it better to step on toes now by asking for my boundary, or let our relationship suffer the consequences if my boundary is continually crossed? And that helps clients kind of get in tune with themselves and feel affirmed that they're making the right decision.
What do you feel are some consequences for not setting a boundary? Like, let's just say they say, oh, I just don't want to step on anybody's toes. I just don't want to have that, because it could be a difficult conversation. I just don't want to have that conversation. What are the consequences that you have seen or been aware of that can happen?
Resentment, huge resentment, irritability, or burnout if it's kind of like a caretaking role that you're being put in that you're not totally okay with. I like to, when people ask me, what is the definition of boundaries? I haven't found a definition online that I feel like is totally comprehensive, because it's always about setting them with someone else. But I think it's also about setting them with yourself. So what I came up with, because I couldn't find something I liked enough, was boundaries are limits that you put in place with others or with yourself to protect your peace. And I think protecting your peace has to be your priority.
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially right now. I mean, for me, I had to set a lot of boundaries for myself, because I was very in the kind of, at first I felt like I set very rigid boundaries to where, and I could see that some people were like, girl, it's like your way or the highway. Like, that's not always going to work. So have you had that where people, you know, they want to respect and put boundaries on themselves and limits on themselves, but they go kind of the extreme way where it's more like rigid? How would you help someone who may have rigid boundaries to kind of lessen, you know, give themselves a little bit more leeway on certain things? If you can give an example.
I love that question because I actually have an exercise I do with clients to target that exactly. So, and it's a visualization, yes, exercise, where I ask them, I say, I want you to picture what this boundary looks like and tell me, is it a window? Is it a brick wall? Or is it a peephole? Is it a cement wall? Is it a glass door where you can like watch but not partake? What is this boundary and what do you see? And people get really descriptive and they even get even more creative in coming up with these things. And that gives me an idea of what type of boundary they find necessary. And then we talk about what's making them feel that way and what steps we can take, because I never want to suggest a boundary to someone. They need to tell me what they need and what they're feeling.
Absolutely. And so do you feel like when you're working with boundaries, I mean, it is kind of like working backwards, right? Finding out what's limiting you so that you could get to maybe a healthy boundary that is going to help with that limit that you have. Can you give us some examples of healthy boundaries for ourselves? Maybe some stuff that you've used yourself or that you've seen your clients have put in place and have actually really worked for them. I know every situation is different, but.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Right. And it's so nuanced. It always depends. They're different for everyone. But I definitely recommend reflecting on the categories that we discussed. So emotional limits, physical limits, time limits, verbal limits, sexual limits, and limits around generosity. So I'm thinking time limits. One that's been healthy in my relationship with my husband and I is, okay, what is our expectation going into this family gathering? And maybe we need to put some boundaries around that. I know in my family, we have these like 3-day long family reunions and we're like, okay, maybe we spend the day here, but then we go out to dinner, just the two of us, and get some space and some time to reconnect. Maybe we stay in a hotel this time and we don't sleep there. Or if it's more of like a daily get together, maybe we decide, okay, we're going to go from 3 to 6 instead of 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. because that would be overwhelming. So that's an example of time limits, I would say. Verbal limits would be something like telling someone, you know, I feel disrespected by you when you speak to me that way. And, or if, oh, a big one is parents venting to their kids. And I get that one so often in my office. And so setting boundaries with your parents about the type of conversations you want to have and communication that you feel is appropriate, and why you are or not an appropriate outlet. And usually you're not.
Oh, wow. That's a tough one. That would be a really tough one. I could just imagine, you know, my little sister, she's 15, but she's got her boundaries. Like we're so polar opposites. And that example that you gave about the, like, verbally telling your parent, hey, I don't think that I can, you know, I don't have the mental space to hear whatever you're saying right now, or I just can't deal right now. Obviously, sometimes they do it very different for her. It's more of a, the way she does it is like closing her door. You know, I think some kids, some teenagers will just be, I'm just going to close my door. And that's my boundary, saying that right now I don't want to be bothered, or I don't want to talk to you right now, and just respect that I don't want to talk to you right now. So for my sister, it's less verbal in a way, but like more of kind of displaying this, okay, I just don't feel okay, or walking away, mm-hmm. for her. you know, just saying, I can't talk about this right now, walking away.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I see a lot of young families too, that physical limits come up for them. For instance, they have a toddler or a young child, like 5 or 7, who's like crawling all over them all the time, and they're becoming irritable or resentful about their personal space, even though they love their child. And so it's separating, like, you can love your child and you can set healthy physical limits for them at the same time. It doesn't make you a bad parent to say, I need my space, and walking through that.
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't have a kid, but I can feel it with my dog. Like, I have to have personal boundaries with him because he just wants to be all loving. But sometimes, we need to put him in his crate, and he knows he needs to have crate time, and he needs to have some alone time and play by himself time, which has really helped him be independent. And that's what a lot of our friends have told us, make sure that he knows how to do self play, because then he's always going to want to be with you, and that's not always realistic. But it's the same thing, I guess, with children. It's making sure that you, you know, live in a, like, mommy needs some time to go to the restroom, or mommy needs to do this, you know, just setting those boundaries with early on so that it could, you won't feel the burnout, the frustration or resentment because you're constantly on and never explaining to people what you need. And I think honestly, it really just comes down to communication.
And even before the communication, identifying your wants and needs. I think people don't even realize how hard of a time they have with that. And back to enmeshed families, if your role in the family has become a caretaker or, you know, a source of support for someone else in this enmeshed system, then you've learned to focus on others and not to focus on your own wants and needs or to prioritize them. So that's emotionally and physically draining, and ignoring your own needs might have become the norm for you. So tuning into those and having a safe space to really own them in therapy to then be able to communicate them.
Yeah. And so what were the categories you mentioned? You said verbal, time, physical, sexual.
And emotional also, because, and then generosity.
Yeah. You know, I was seeing something on Pinterest, and it had like the categories, right? And it had mental and emotional. Mm-hmm. And to be completely honest, I didn't know what the difference were. I don't know if, do you believe that there's a difference with emotional and mental?
I think of mental as more thought-based and emotional as more feeling-based. So that's kind of how I separate that. I'm trying to think of an example. Emotional might be, you know, I don't like the way that, well, verbal would be, I don't like the way that you're speaking to me. I'll have to think about that. I think mental, I think of like conversations that you're not okay with, like politics. Like, that's kind of what I think about when it comes to mental. Like, I'm not going to go there with you. Yeah. Like, that's my mental limit here.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you know of an example of emotional? I'm just trying to.
Oh, yes. Okay. So emotional would be, okay, I have these examples, like hanging up on a call if it's not going well with your parents and you're highly triggered, or creating stronger boundaries with people who don't respond well to yours, or also not feeling guilt about setting the boundaries. Mm-hmm. And then verbal, I would say, or mental would be political conversations, faith conversations, education conversations. It is kind of, they kind of go together.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's just important for people to just think about, like what you said, what are your wants and your needs in this particular time? And also revisiting them. Like, how often do you feel you revisit, or you've asked your clients to revisit their boundaries? If maybe it worked for a season, but it's not always, I mean, that, for me, when COVID happened, I really had to kind of look at my boundaries, both personal and professional, and think of them differently.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I think boundaries are always being renegotiated. You're never in the same space in life, right? They have to be renegotiated in different settings, in different roles. I mean, you can add children into the equation and your boundaries can completely change, or, you know, global pandemic will completely change your boundaries. So that's life. It's just a constant renegotiation of your wants and needs and what you're comfortable with. And those are going to change and evolve over time.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have this question, and it was a statement that I had seen as I was doing some research, and the statement says, and I want kind of your opinion on what do you think about this? It says, for boundaries to work, there must be consequences if they are not respected.
Okay. So when I first hear that, I think it feels threatening.
Yeah. Right.
And a major issue with boundary setting. So to be completely honest, like when teenage girls and young women who often have trouble setting boundaries, just culturally, their biggest fear is that they're going to be seen as like a B word or just like harsh and aggressive if they honestly communicate their wants and needs and set boundaries. So I am constantly dispelling that myth and promoting like a healthy assertiveness, which is also often scary to some people. But I think that phrase, it promotes this idea that boundaries are aggressive and that there's a consequence, right? It's almost fear-based. And in reality, I think boundaries are really compassionate because they do protect your relationships and they keep the resentment out of the equation. And they also prioritize your peace. So I don't love that statement, right? I think what maybe they were trying to communicate is that if someone doesn't respect your boundary, then you've got to stick to it and really just kind of enforce it. And that might feel to some people like consequences, but those are people that are not exercising respect for you and your boundary.
Mm-hmm. I had put in I put a post on Instagram, and it was kind of giving people some ways of how to voice your boundaries. So, you know, how you voice your boundary matters. And this got me to think on one particular one where it says, let's see. If this happens one more time, I'm done. You'll see. And I feel like that's in a very threatening way, you know, right? And then like the healthier ways, I feel hurt when you don't consider me in making decisions. I need to be included in making them going forward. Instead of just being like, okay, if you don't do this, you're going to see, you know, what happens or you doing that. But yeah, I think it goes back to some people do think that if somebody doesn't respect your boundaries, then they get the consequences because they're not respecting them. But in a sense, it's just like standing your ground in a way that's still respectful. And that you're just communicating, saying like, you know, I said what I said, I really would appreciate you respecting this, moving forward. This is going to help our relationship or our dynamic, you know, moving forward. Totally. I think it's like important for people to voice their boundaries in a very healthy way. But oftentimes I think we lead with, I mean, as a woman, I lead with emotions, and oftentimes if I have to step away from the conversation and then come back and say, okay, what I was trying to say is this, because if I'm speaking out of anger or frustration, it's going to come out accusatory and using those yous. I have to catch myself in those conversations because it's so easy, you know, and especially if you did not have something like a good relationship growing up. I'm talking about, you know, like with like couples, like if you didn't have a healthy relationship, you know, that you could see as role models, it's hard to now when you're an adult to find that for yourself. And so you're kind of have to reteach yourself some of the childhood things that you may not have learned because you didn't have role models in those situations, or you thought that's how things were. My dad treated my mom this way, or my mom treated my dad this way. And so that's how, you know, things worked.
Yeah. And unlearning is as difficult as learning sometimes, especially when it's just ingrained and modeled. But I think what you're speaking to is also regulation. To set a boundary successfully and assertively versus aggressively, you've got to be regulated and you have to learn how to self-regulate. And that's a skill many of us have to learn in therapy and be given the language because when you are speaking from a dysregulated place and you are flooded and triggered, you're not going to have a filter on your language I think our brains revert to something like a 10-year-old when we're in that space. And so I would not rely on a 10-year-old to be eloquently delivering and communicating a boundary in a respectful way.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, no, yeah. I think it's like, I get people reach out to me and they're like, I just don't think therapy's for me. My problem isn't big enough. And, you know, and they clearly have some issues with boundary setting, or they've expressed that. And I'm just like, that is something that you can work in therapy. You know, it doesn't, just because you don't have a mental health diagnosis, they're just everyday things that you kind of need some guidance and some just, like education on, where you can have healthier relationships. Like, why would you want to be in a relationship that's toxic for you, or that you're being toxic? And I don't like the word toxic. There was somebody on Instagram that said it very nicely. It's unhealed trauma. Mm-hmm. It's people who have just unhealed circumstances in their lives, and now they express it in maybe some toxic tendencies. But yeah, I think a lot of people have to realize that even some of the things that we go to therapy for can be things like boundary setting, personal development, and just building better, healthier relationships for our lives.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think therapy is for everyone in every stage. And it's just a commitment to self-growth. And there are times when you can totally take a year off or 6 months off or a few years off if you're in a good place. But I always emphasize to my clients, if you're in a ventral state more often, so ventral is like happiness, joy, relaxation, creativity, rather than in more of an anxious or a shutdown state, you still have got to do things to maintain that ventral state and that happiness, and not neglect it just because you're there. It still requires maintenance, just like in your relationships. They require maintenance. Like, my husband and I have a great relationship, and we still schedule a couple session once a month. And we're like, how can we be better? How can we communicate better? Like, let's, you know, talk out anything that we've got going on or what's on our minds, and just have a space to do that, because it's so healthy and intentional that way. And I look forward to those sessions. I think he does too.
No, yeah. I think it's like, yeah, I feel like when you're both in alignment with wanting to just better yourselves and just do better in a relationship, I think, there have been seasons where things have been great. And I found myself thinking, I need to go to therapy, but everything's fine, but I just need to go to therapy because I just want to make sure that I maintain this, the state of feeling that I have is maintained, and then I don't allow things that could trigger me. And also, we're not aware, sometimes triggers just come randomly. COVID trigger for me. And so I definitely need to do some self-care, slow down, because when I have a lot of time, I get into the productivity trap. And so I had to set limits with myself, because it's so easy when I'm at work in an office, I know that, okay, my brain is telling me work time, but when I'm at home, my brain doesn't know when to shut down. I have to remind it, hey, it's past 5. You can shut down that computer. You can do that. You have the same time that you had today for tomorrow. But yeah, I think revisiting those boundaries, voicing your needs and wants, getting yourself to be able to maintain that sense of happiness and joy in your life does require for you to be present. I read this, that self-care needs to be done deliberately and purposefully and intentionally. Mm-hmm. Because without it, you know, you end up feeling that you can't handle or overwhelm and all these anxiety provoking thoughts. And so with self-care, it's not going to come naturally sometimes. And that's what I tell my clients. Self-care actually doesn't come natural sometimes. It might need to be goal oriented and purposeful for you, before it could be effortless. Cause they see things on social media. Oh, I saw that person. She's doing self-care cause she's on vacation, but we don't know that. You don't know that just because you see someone going on vacation that they're actually enjoying themselves or even practicing self-care.
Right.
So I tell them, focus on what your needs are. And self-care, for me, I think of self-care as the hierarchy of needs. at our basic level, getting that sleep that we need, getting the nutrition that we need, getting the exercise that we need so that we can go, you know, up the hierarchy of needs. I feel like that's how, when I think of self-care, I always start, am I getting enough sleep? Do I feel safe?
Yeah. Am I feeding myself well?
Yeah.
Am I eating three meals a day?
Yeah. Definitely. And those are the boundaries that you give yourself. Like, I want to make sure, you know, that I'm treating my body well. And what does that look like to you? You know, but not giving yourself shame and guilt for maybe I went to McDonald's one day. It's okay. Maybe that's what your body needed at the time. Yeah. You know, it's okay to allow yourself. I think it's when we limit ourselves, we can see some very maladaptive behavior if we limit ourselves. I don't think self-care is limiting. And I don't think boundaries, I think with boundaries, it's making us, I feel like it gives us space to do, to just walk life in a healthy way.
Definitely. Yeah. And protect your peace.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. Protecting your peace. I'm going to quote you. So my final question, and I don't know if I asked you this in our previous episode, but one of the questions that I always ask all my guests is, what is one thing you wish people would just talk about more?
Emotional impact. I was just talking about this actually, and I'll get to that. But saying, you know, I felt this way when this happened, and using I statements similar to when you set your boundaries. Because if we don't communicate openly and honestly about our feelings and the emotional impact that events and interactions have, then we can't use that to inform future interactions and occurrences, which sets us up for failure and disappointment. So I think it's brave and vulnerable to be honest. And many family cultures and systems, I really don't believe that they promote this enough. And many families, I know, even in my family growing up, like feelings weren't totally openly discussed and there's a discomfort there. And I really do blame stigma and culture around mental health for that. So I was actually talking to my father-in-law last weekend, and he works for the Department of Defense. And he was saying, you know, when we do psychological evaluations of our guys who are in the service, like, they get really nervous to disclose any mental health stuff because he does like top secret clearances and they're afraid we're going to take it away. And, you know, he was telling me, and obviously he knows I'm a therapist, he's like, mental health is just as important as physical health. Like, if you disclose that you have a broken leg, like, you can disclose that you struggle with anxiety too. And we're not going to fault you for that. It's just as long as you are being responsible about taking care of it. That's the really critical piece. But then I said to him, yeah, but we don't talk about it the same. And I said, at Thanksgiving, are you going to ask so-and-so how their depression is going? Like, you're not going to, I mean, if they have a broken leg, you're going to be like, wow, how's your broken leg healing? You're not going to say, how's your depression healing? And so we kind of started laughing, I mean, in a messed up way, but he was like, yeah, you're right. And we kind of like giggled even at the thought of doing that.
Yeah, you don't talk about these kinds of things. And it's almost like the family secret, you know, the family secret that nobody talks about. You know, somebody, you know, is struggling with anxiety or not doing really well, or had something traumatic happen, but we don't ask because we feel uncomfortable. Honestly, I've talked to my family about this, and they've said sometimes I don't ask how things are going to people or to other family members because I'm afraid of, you know, once they say something that I have to react or say something and I don't know what I should say, or what if I say the wrong thing, or what if I'm like, you know, shaming the way they feel, because a lot of the times the narrative was, oh, you can get over that. You just have to be productive. Like, you just have to clean the house. You just have to get up and do something. You know, what do you mean depression? What do you mean? I lost my job, or I've been in, you know, I moved to this country, and you can't let depression, you know, stop you. And it's like, so then it stops the person from saying, and that's in my culture, in very Hispanic culture. I mean, especially if you're a child of an immigrant, for them, it's like, even though they felt it, they felt the impact, the trauma of moving to a different country, the depression, the anxiety, it's not openly talked about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a couple things at play there too. I mean, obviously that can feel really dismissive or invalidating, but I try to look for the good intention in everyone, right? So to them, it might be either, let me just tell you something to get through this, right? And not having the words. And in that case, I always say, just be honest. Say, I don't even know what to say, right? That can be one of like the most healing things to say to someone. When friends have come to me with things that are just terrible, I'm honest and I say, I don't even know what to say. Right. And so taking that pressure to say something, because yeah, when you have that much pressure to say something, sometimes what comes out is invalidating to that person. It's too much pressure. Just be honest with yourself. But then secondly, when you get responses like that from people that are like, oh, just power through, like they might really have a discomfort with connecting to that emotion themselves. Mm-hmm. And so not taking that so personally, because it really might be more about their own discomfort.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And we can go into toxic positivity and all this. I know it's just always, always fun to talk to you. But love that question. I definitely think that we have to talk more about that. So I want to know where people can find you. Do you have any interesting or exciting projects coming up or anything like that?
I do. So I think we talked about this last time. I offer consulting for therapists now. And so when I first started offering it, it was around private practice things. So how to get your private practice up and running, get some systems working, and how to do all of that. But then I found that most therapists were reaching out to me saying, can you help me on Instagram? Like, I see that you've grown your following on Instagram, and like, can we do some consulting around that? So I would say probably like 70% of my consulting clients have now become Instagram growth clients.
So awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I love talking about that. We can totally talk about that for an hour. But I do have a few other projects in the works right now. One of them is a podcast. Yay.
Yay. So excited.
Yes. So it's going to be called My Therapist Thinks. And I'm co-hosting it with a friend from grad school at Columbia. And she's a fellow therapist. And she lives in Kentucky and has a private practice there. She's someone that I would call after work, and she calls me after work on the way home, because we are really close. And we were at one point, we were just like, we should be recording these.
I was just saying that. I was like, you could just record on your way after work. I mean, that's the best types of podcasts, I feel.
Yeah. So that'll be releasing in July if August is planned. I mean, with COVID and everything, we were hoping to like do a photo shoot before the launch, but like, I'm not sure how things are going to go with that. So we'll just see and play it by ear. But other than that, I mean, you can find me on Instagram at Your Journey Through. And then my website is yourjourneythrough.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on this podcast. I know you're very busy, but always a treat to have you and just to get your insight on some of these things.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Cafe with Monica. If you enjoyed the episode, I want you to take a screenshot right now and share it on Instagram stories by tagging Cafe with Monica. This helps me spread the word so more and more people can hashtag just talk about it. Also, make sure to visit cafewithmonica.com to access the show notes and resources from this episode. I can't wait for you to listen to the next episode, so see you guys next time.